Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Don't mess with Nate Jackson. He spent 6 years on the NFL gridiron playing tight end and wide receiver. When all those slams, tackles, and falls took their toll, he retired, wrote a widely praised memoir, and signed up with his pals for fantasy football. He's been champ several times in a couple of fantasy leagues. He's got a wicked way with words, and now a new book that asks some tough questions about the fantasy side of football. This hour on Point, Nate Jackson on pro football, fantasy football, and what's happening to the game, to the players, and to the fans. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How do you take your football? Brewski and face paint in the stands, hollering at the TV? Are you a wannabe team manager living the dream through fantasy football? What's right and what's wrong about this game? And are you, as a fan, part of the problem? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and face paint and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're in football season for sure. Joining me now from NPR West in Culver City, California is Nate Jackson. His new book is called Fantasy Man, a former NFL's player descent into the brutality of fantasy football. You'll find an excerpt, by the way, on our website at onpointradio.org. He was signed by the San Francisco 49ers and Cleveland Browns, played 6 seasons as a tight end and wide receiver for the Denver Broncos. His 2013 book, Slow Getting Up, was dubbed the best football memoir of all time by Rolling Stone magazine. Nate Jackson, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. So what's the brutality? You played the real thing, and you're not by any means a straight up football hater. You're writing here, the song of a football game relaxes me, pads cracking, whistles blowing, fans cheering, coaches yelling, it's lodged in my soul. But you're talking about brutality in fantasy football, isn't it? Just guys sitting around with their laptops?
Yeah, it was meant to be an ironic subtitle. There's not a lot brutal about it, but it is brutal the way we treat them, the way we objectify them, the way we cut them loose when they're not doing well for us, the way we talk about them when they're not performing for us. And I think the whole industrial approach to treating the individual player has really coarsened over the years as fantasy football has taken hold in this country. And I think that's what the brutality was about for me. I wanted to tell a story about both sides, the fantasy and the reality.
I want to go to that, but tell us first about what it's been like for you. What, you're half a dozen years out now from your time in the NFL. What's that process of decompression or that exit from professional football like, Nate?
Well, it's a very difficult exit because for football players, our whole lives were spent chasing that one dream. So the answer to every question that anyone asks is always football. And you have people opening up doors for you and helping out your ascent into the world of football. It always felt fated. It always felt like destiny. And you push through the doubt. You push through the pain. Pursuing that glory on the field, well, one day someone taps you on the shoulder and says it's all over. They hand you a trash bag. They tell you to clean out your locker, and you are standing there alone as the door shuts, and there's really no one to help you out now that it's over. All those people who are around when you're playing in the NFL, taking care of your body, trying to take care of everything off the field for you, wanting to be around you, those people just disappear, and the player is on his own trying to navigate the real world without real world skills. Football players don't really learn how to articulate their own ideas, to be creative, to come up with a solution, to ask questions. Football's about obedience. That's really good if you're creating a football team, but for individuals outside of that, it doesn't work. And so football players often find themselves lost when they finish playing. They don't have the skills to articulate their ideas, and they don't know what to do, because in football, the only thing that matters is football. So I think there's an inevitable depression that follows everybody when they leave the game. I think there's probably about a 5-year kind of downswing when you're trying to figure out who you are. And when I talk to players, I just encourage them to just push through it and focus on something you care about. Use the money you spent or you earned playing in the NFL to fund your search for your new self and your new life, because that's going to take some time and there's no timeline for it.
You figured out you could write, and you can write like a dream. You found a way. So I get it. You got to grab onto something. You grabbed onto something you do very, very well. What got you grabbing on as a former pro player to fantasy football? Did that really give you some satisfaction after the real thing?
Not really. More of a distraction after the real thing. I was adrift, like I was just talking about, and I have a lot of buddies who are true football and sports fans, high school friends, college friends, childhood friends that I grew up with, and they play fantasy football. And so about a year or two after I was done, they asked me if I wanted to be in their leagues, and I agreed. I didn't really know much about fantasy football other than when a friend would tell me that he drafted me in the last round when I was playing, and don't let me down, he said to me. I definitely let him down because I was not fantasy football relevant statistic-wise. There are 53 guys on every team. Maybe three or four of them are guys you'd want on your fantasy football team. So the movement of the ball, whereas in fantasy football it's tracked just by one player, it takes a whole team to move a ball. Everybody's the same in the locker room. And so when I left that situation, I thought, why would I want to play fantasy football? But what I've seen is that it's an opportunity for me to stay in contact with my friends. We get together at the end of the summer and have our draft. We have a few beers. We make fun of each other relentlessly, which we do very well. And that serves as the opening chapter for the book. And I thought that I was looking for a new writing project. I thought that that was a kind of a good view of the modern NFL, the difference between the fantasy and the reality. And so I really threw myself into that fantasy world for all it was worth, and found a lot of things, some good, some bad. But that's what's in the book.
Well, we're going to have a lot of listeners who will be all over that, big fantasy football players and others who may have no idea how it works. You talk about 53 guys on the team and drafts and all that. Would you just run us through, for those who are not fantasy football aficionados, how it works?
Yeah, well, the 53 men are on an actual NFL team. But for fantasy football, you draft 16, 17, 18 individual players for your fantasy football team.
You have X amount of money to do that with, I presume.
Well, yeah, Well, some drafts are different. Some leagues are auction drafts, so you have 200 theoretical dollars to spend on your 18 players, and you auction players. So some top players might go for $50, $60, and some guys might go for $1. But the other leagues that I was in is a snake draft, and so it's just first pick, second pick, third pick, and it goes around, and you just get whoever's available. So you draft guys scattered on different NFL teams, and their individual performance in games affects your own team, scores points for your team. You have to set your lineup so you don't have all 16 of those guys starting.
Right.
You have 8 or 9, depending on the league and how many slots are available. But what that requires is you studying their injuries and knowing who is hurt and who you have to put in the lineup. And so it requires some time spent sitting in front of the computer looking at who's injured, who's going to play, what the stories are about these teams. So it sucks a lot of time out of the average American worker's schedule to go through this stuff and be good at it.
And it adds up to victory or loss depending on the actual on-field performance of the players that you've drafted for your team on any given game day.
Right. It quantifies essentially the movement of the ball. So the only people who are scoring points are those who hold the ball. Running backs, receivers, quarterbacks, tight ends, kickers can score for you. Team defenses can score for you. There's a point system for a team defense. But this is mostly about offense and offensive individual players scoring. And the interesting thing about fantasy football and the wisdom that's permeated from it is oftentimes the best fantasy football player, statistic-wise, is on a really bad football team in the NFL, and they don't win. And so the wisdom is kind of counterintuitive when it comes to actual real football, being on the field trying to win games.
And I know you use brutality in an ironic way to some extent, because it's not like having your head bashed in on the field, and yet there is a kind of brutalization of the way fans look at players that comes with the fantasy football dynamic, you write. How's that emerge, Nate?
Well, I think it's gotten worse over the years. Fans demand perfection out of football players, we sometimes forget that these football players on the field are the best in our species at this game. They are the best that Mother Nature has to offer, and oftentimes it's just not good enough for fans. You know, you go to a game, you hear people booing, and it's gotten worse, but now with fantasy football, it affects me, and it affects my team, so I'm extra angry if this guy doesn't perform up to his expectations. And it's with the advent of social media, these guys, a lot of football players, they have Twitter accounts, they have Instagram and things like that, and they will be attacked on those platforms by fantasy football owners across the world or across the country who are unsatisfied with their performance. And what that does, I think just for the modern player, it sometimes makes it a burden to have that talent and to be at that level and to be bombarded by the expectations of people who have nothing physically invested in this product whatsoever. It could be Angry Birds they're playing or Pokemon Go. They are putting nothing at stake physically, yet they are incredibly angry when their teams don't perform. It's also fracturing the loyalties of fans to the teams they once cared about. For example, Broncos fans might be sitting in the stands silently cheering or even out loud cheering a Raiders player for scoring a touchdown because that Raiders player is on his fantasy football team. And so you go to stadiums and you can kind of feel that. You can feel the fractured loyalties and you can feel the restlessness of the fans in a way that I don't think it used to be.
Is it just to win or is it because there's money on the line?
I think it's just to win. I mean, for most of these leagues, there's money on the line, but that's not a lot of money. I put $100 in for my the leagues with my buddy, and the winner takes $500. That's a lot of money, but for the most of us, we don't win, and it's really just about a weekly contest with your buddy for bragging rights, or it just gives you a little more skin in the game, and it makes it more important somehow, and it makes you feel as if you had a hand in this, like you read the tea leaves and you put the guy in the starting lineup that you knew, you had this feeling he was going to be the one. And so it develops this sense of ownership around the performances of players that I think is strange and sometimes unhealthy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about football, life after football, and fantasy football. What it's doing to players, what it's doing to the game, what it's doing to fans. My guest is Nate Jackson. He played in the NFL a half dozen years, most of it for the Denver Broncos. He's out with a new book, Fantasy Man, a former NFL player's descent into the brutality of fantasy football. He joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California today. You can join us today. Do you play fantasy football? What do you get from it? What's the rush, the thrill, the obsession with fantasy football? Does it make you want to watch the, does it make you just simply watch the game differently? Does it change the way you look at the players? They've been meat for the league. Are they now meat for you? Last year, the whole fantasy football industry just blanketed the airwaves with TV commercials to get lots of people into this, to the point there was a backlash, people saying this is gambling and all kinds of state governments getting involved. By one estimate, there was a commercial by one or the other, the big FanDuel or DraftKings, every 90 seconds on some channels. Here's part of a 2015 spot for FanDuel.
FanDuel's one-week fantasy leagues are paying out $2 billion this year, more than any other site.
I won $15,000 off of a $5 entry.
Winners get immediate cash payouts, and there's no season-long commitment. Don't miss week one, Sunday Million, with $5 million on the line. Try FanDuel today.
And all of a sudden, everybody's talking about fantasy football. Comedy Central's Daily Show reported on FBI investigations last year into daily fantasy football. Trevor Noah, host, explained here how the industry is rigged, he said, in ways very similar to Wall Street. Suddenly, his spiel is cut short on The Daily Show by senior fantasy sports correspondent Jordan Kepler, who's standing outside a bar, brewski in hand. Dude, don't spoil my fun, he says.
Why are you trying to kill something so beautiful, huh? Without fantasy, what's the point of football? If I have no money at stake, I'd just be watching grown men gradually give each other brain damage. Sick.
So you don't mind that the whole thing seems rigged?
That's part of the challenge. If I can win, even with all the built-in disadvantages, that's an accomplishment. If I lose, not my fault. The damn thing's rigged.
Without fantasy, what's the point of football? Nate Jackson, plenty of fantasy football players calling for you. Tamika in Charleston, South Carolina. Tamika, do you play fantasy football? Why?
Yes. Hi, Tom. Yes, I do. I'm in year seven of a 12-team PPR league based out of Philadelphia called Docina Sucia, the Dirty Dozen. So It's great. I love fantasy. We do play for cash. However, it's more the camaraderie. I relocated from the Philly metro area, it's a great way for me to keep in touch with friends and colleagues. It's awesome.
What about what Nate says, not entirely tongue-in-cheek, that when you play fantasy football, all you really care about is the individual performance. If somebody gets injured, boom, you're done with them, you drop them, they're out, and, you know, the sort of team loyalty goes away, and it just turns into treating the guys more and more like meat on the field.
Well, I just think from a fantasy participant standpoint, for us, we don't take our fanaticism that seriously. We're diehard sports fans first and foremost, so we do care about the game, and we frequent games and whatnot. It can come off that way. It's never that serious for me. I'm never going to yell or blame a player if I ever encounter one in real life for fumbling a ball for a loss. I just really enjoy it. I think there's always levels to people's, enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And it's just a way to really learn the game. For those who don't know football, I think it's a great way to learn the basics of football. So I see the better parts of it, not necessarily the more negative parts.
How's your team doing? Your fantasy team doing, Tamika?
Horrible. I'm a horrible owner. I'm 1-4.
Oh. Hang in. One more, and I'll bring it to you, Nate. Matt in Milton, Massachusetts. Matt, you're on the air with Nate Jackson.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Nate. How you guys doing?
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that I think that the fantasy football really makes an impact in the sport these days, because you always hear the coaches, even on TV or in press conferences, saying things, well, I don't care what fantasy owners think. I'm doing this to make the team better. So I think it has actually made an impact.
Explain that again. You think it's affecting real football, and why? How, Matt?
It just seems like the coaches are, the press is always asking a coach, well, how do you feel about doing this? And they'll always say, well, I don't care if Melvin Gordon is running how many ever yards in the last four games. I'm going to play him, but I'm not going to play him if he starts messing up. I'm not doing this for the fantasy. I'm doing this to make the team better.
I see. So it's on their minds. Nate Jackson, how about it? Do you see fantasy football now weighing on the minds of players or coaches?
No. For coaches, they are irritated by it, is what is going on, and they are forced to ask or answer questions about it from reporters. And when they turn on the TV and they see SportsCenter or ESPN, it has fantasy football shows devoted to specifically fantasy football, and it's seeping into the lexicon of people who cover the game. And so when they step into that press room and ask coaches about it, coaches have to roll their eyes and assume that a lot of their questions are coming from a statistic-focused point, and a lot of those statistics are based on fantasy football. And so the coach is going to play whatever player he wants based on who he thinks is going to win. Like I said before, 53 guys on a team, you know, you have a week of practice, maybe one guy looks better than the other guy,
yeah,
or they have some plays they want to run that don't get it to that fantasy stud. There's a lot of reasons why the fantasy stud is not going to get the ball this week, and if he doesn't, that guy's going to have to answer to some irritated people. And so the coach, I think, is throwing up his hands like, look, guys, we're trying to win football games, and there's one football and 53 guys trying to move it. There's a defense. There's a special teams. There's an offense with 11 players on it. One guy does hold that ball, but 11 players move the ball. And who that guy is that's going to be holding the ball, we don't know yet. But when you expect a certain uniformity of statistics like fantasy football does, it creates a few problems.
Is it true? I mean, in your book, you say the NFL runs about $10 billion a year in revenue. Fantasy football, $11 billion? It somehow moves more money than the NFL itself?
That's what I read, and it's this online gambling stuff. I mean, it basically took the place of the online poker thing, and it's considered a game of skill. And so last year, FanDuel and DraftKings, there was a lot of money moving through those websites. But you have seen it fall off this year. There's not as much advertisements. There's not as much juice because several states kicked them out. They were operating sort of in that gray area of legality. They had investors. ESPN was an investor. A lot of NFL teams invested in these companies, essentially steering this gambling money back into their pockets. But I think they're taking some heat compete. And I think FanDuel and DraftKings are now mired in litigation. They have a lot of lawsuits on their hand, and they're hemorrhaging from legal fees. And I think that's why it's not as ubiquitous as it was last year. But like the caller a couple callers ago, she plays with her friends, and she relocated, and it's a way for them to stay connected. And I think for the most people, that's how they do it.
You've got a league with buddies. You go the season. You've been champ a couple of times, sometimes not. But that's not the daily fantasy football routine. How's that work? Describe the difference.
Right. The daily fantasy routine in football is just for 1 week. 1 week of games. Mm-hmm. You sign up. You bet as much money as you want, and you're put in this bracket with, you know, you could be in a bracket with 50 guys and 20. You can pick your kind of format, and then you pick your players, you set your lineup. Each player has a different price that he costs based on how productive he's been thus far and the projections of how productive he will be. And so there are some algorithms and some software that can be used in these scenarios where you can enter 500 games at once, use the software, use the algorithms in your favor, and that's how these guys are winning these big purses and taking the money from schmucks like me who see the commercial and decide to bet $20 on a 1 week hand. Whereas the stuff that I do with my buddies, it's the whole entire year. So we follow the whole season. Each week I play a new friend. There are standings in the league just like there are in the NFL. There are playoffs just like there are in the NFL. And then a winner is crowned at the end of it.
Anthony in Atlanta, Georgia. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a former high school and college player, and for me, I just play fantasy with my friends and sometimes in the daily league.
Okay.
Because it's just a way to still play football and be competitive and do research and just, you know, get my hands on the game at any cost, honestly. So that, for me, is why I still love playing fantasy football.
And does it scratch the itch? Does it make you feel like you're in the football world again, or is it something different?
It's something different. It's not as close. Like, you know, I follow a little bit more closely. Like, you can't just follow a certain player. You might be looking at their fullback. If their fullback is out, you know, Devontae Freeman might not be running as good. So it's different things, but it's not as good. It's just a little, it's like scratching my ankle, but I'm not scratching my whole body, basically.
scratch your ankle, and sometimes if that's all you can get, maybe that's what you'll take. I mean, so many people focus on this. Here's a show open of SiriusXM's Fantasy Football Show. You don't just have football games now. You have fantasy football shows. Fantasy Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program, everybody. We've got 2 hours of jam-packed fantasy football broadcasting live from Las Vegas. If you've got lineup questions, we've got answers. Dial it in right here on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio.
And here are the TV commercials for NFL fantasy football. Real life New York Giants player Victor Cruz and his teammate Odell Beckham Jr. in the locker room. Cruz is staring at his smartphone, wondering if he should pick Julio Jones of the Atlanta Falcons instead of his own incredulous teammate sitting next to him to play.
Should I start you or Julio this week? I think I'm leaning towards Julio.
Julio?
He's got a good matchup.
We're teammates.
It's nothing personal. It's just if I win this game, I make it to the playoffs.
It's nothing personal, but I'm not picking you. Nate, do the players have this stuff on their mind when they're in the locker room, or is that just that's just for the advertisement?
Not really. I think it's mostly for the advertisement. And what that shows you is that the NFL is now co-opting this fantasy football individual statistic-based performance in a sport that historically has been about the team. It's not about your name. It's about your the logo on your helmet. It's not about me. It's about the guy next to me. The stats don't matter. We do this together. And now it's just been flipped on its head, and the NFL is actually using their own players to advertise for fantasy football on their site. And so I think that for players, I think it can open their eyes to the potential of their own kind of power in this game. So the football player, the NFL player, was always powerless within the system. You obey orders. You don't have the leverage to speak up for yourself or make changes on your own behalf if you do want something to change. But now we see that the player's name, his face, his body of work, and his actual physical body, his health, and his injuries are fodder for this industry, and that's the content. And so I think players are not being fully or properly compensated for the fantasy football kind of their likenesses being used to generate this revenue. I think it's just happening so fast that it's hard to find a way to streamline that and do that. But I think players are not being compensated fully for the fantasy football industry and the money it makes.
And the NFL is in it itself. Now, ESPN is in there as well. We're talking about fantasy football with Nate Jackson, former pro player, author of Fantasy Man. On exactly that point, Todd's writing to us. It says, to asks if we can ask you, if given the popularity of fantasy football, do you think in the future that something might be considered for future labor negotiations between the league and the players in terms of how these revenues get shared or what people get paid?
Yeah, I think so. I think that revenue should be steered back into players' pockets. I know I'm a player advocate, and I'm always going to bat for the players, but I believe that if you're using their face, if you're using their name, if you're using their actual healthcare records, which I think is a bit problematic, then the players should be compensated and should have more of a say in this. You know, we don't ever question this, but a player's medical records and healthcare is public. It's not for me and it's not for you. We're protected by HIPAA laws, but in the NFL, because of team betting first and accurate betting spreads, but now because of fantasy football, the health and the injuries of an individual player are very important to me as a fantasy owner. I need to know if this man is hurt. I need to know how long he's going to be out. I need to know what his treatment is like. And so there are significant percentages of these shows devoted to a human being's injuries and the timeline for his return and how badly he's hurt and if he's faking it and when he's going to be back. I think this is a problem that the union should address and try to kind of pull the privacy rights back into their corner. But as long as they can't, as long as they don't have the leverage to do that, they should at least try to get some of the money.
Jared in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on with Nate Jackson, Jared.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was making an observation. I listen to a lot of sports talk radio, and there's a quandary as to why viewership is down. Some people were saying it's the Kaepernick effect. Some people were saying it's going up against debates. But I think fantasy football is a huge aspect of this. As a Miami Dolphins fan, a Redskin fan, my team suck. So I don't even bother to look at their individual games, as opposed to looking at how my individual fantasy players are doing, and they can be on a variety of teams. So the loyalty aspect of we used to watch football and watch our team playing someone or in watching our division play other people. Now that loyalty is kind of dissipating.
Yes.
I wonder what your guest thinks about
it. It's a great question, Jared. I've wondered the same. I mean, I've read just recently here, Nate, that football ratings, television viewership ratings are down double digits across the board. Ratings down on Sunday afternoons on Fox and CBS, on Sunday nights on NBC, Monday nights on ESPN. Atlantic's writing here. Jared says maybe it's fantasy football doing that, because who cares about the team?
Yeah, I think Jared might be onto something. I think it is going to have a ripple effect on the game. For example, there's a channel called the Red Zone Channel on the NFL Network where all you see are touchdowns. Every time a team gets inside the 20-yard line, they flip to that team and you watch them score either a field goal or a touchdown. And that is fantasy football related, absolutely. And so there are a lot of football fans who now just stay at home and watch that Red Zone Channel. They care more about the players who are scoring across the league than an actual team winning and grinding it out. You know, a football game can be a bit of a grind, a bit boring, quote unquote, to some people who are wanting or expecting scores, touchdowns, field goals, things like that. But I think there's a lot of reasons why the game is losing viewers. Also, I think it's starting to become, in my opinion, it's relatively predictable. When I watch football, I see the same plays, I see the same coaches, I see the same formations, the same players shuffle from team to team, identical media protocols, identical team meeting schedules. It's all, they steal their plays from one another. There isn't a lot of innovation, and the way that they expect players to kind of speak in cliches, it takes a little bit of the personality out of the players. They have a hard time being themselves, I think, and I think the product itself is suffering from a little bit of overproduction. I think if they took the reins off these players a little bit, let them improvise on the field a little more, let them trust their instincts, let them say what they want through the media and not can their answers like they do. But I do believe that Jared's right. I think fantasy football is contributing to the falling ratings. Come to see victory.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about football, life after football, and fantasy football, what it's doing to players, what it's doing to the game, what it's doing to fans. My guest is Nate Jackson. He played pro football in the NFL, most of it for the Denver Broncos. Now he's writing, wrote Slow Getting Up. It's been called the best football memoir of all time, Rolling Stone says. He's out with a new book, Fantasy Man, a former NFL player's descent into the brutality of fantasy football. And one of the things he says is that people just don't care as much about people, the players' injuries. Or they care, but only for the stats that will drive the success or opposite of their fantasy football team. I mean, sometimes it is so rugged out there. Here's a wild card game in January between the Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals. Pittsburgh wide receiver Antonio Brown was hit hard helmet-to-helmet by the Bengals. Vontaze Burfict sustaining a concussion. And here's the CBS sports commentators reacting to that nauseating slow-motion replay of his head rolling limply on his shoulders as he falls to the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
That's, of course, flagrant.
Out of control?
Out of control. It's going to be everything. That's going to be suspension, fine.
Flagrant, hard to watch. But how do you process that? If you're playing fantasy football, you may just see it as an element in your stats, in your fantasy success. Here's a moment from the Pat Mayo Show on cable and web fantasy sports channel FNTSY in August. Minnesota Vikings QB Teddy Bridgewater gets injured, and he's done, says the host of the show. Bye-bye, Bridgewater. But never mind, the injury won't affect this host's overall fantasy rankings. I mean, it's not like he's Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers or anything.
Teddy Bridgewater done for the season. Ambulance came on the field. He has no kneecap left. So, you know, Sean Hill's going to be starting for the Vikings right now. The way that I see it is that's not going to change. It's not like Teddy Bridgewater, well, being a pretty okay quarterback. It's not like Aaron Rodgers went down and some dud is replacing him.
Nate Jackson, there it is. First, the real pain on the field that you see in that first clip. And then here we've got the fantasy football take on injuries on the field. Well, what's it doing for me?
Yeah, there's such a disconnect. There already was a disconnect between what the players are actually sacrificing or risking on the field and what it takes to be a football fan or a football participant from the outside. But fantasy football really just cements that in a way that gives men like you just showed the clip the license to say, yeah, Teddy Bridgewater, his kneecap is sticking out of the side of his leg, but never mind that. He's not even a very good quarterback anyway. We want a guy on our team like Aaron Rodgers, who's a good quarterback, who's an elite quarterback. And so there's this real separation and also a belittling of the talent and the work that these athletes put in to get to where they are, just to be called a crappy quarterback and off with his head because he's no longer of use to us. I think the NFL will tell you that they like it because there are more eyeballs on it. There are more people interested in it. I think I read last year that at one point during the season, 7 of the 10 top looked at articles on ESPN were fantasy football related, and they were simply just advice as to who to pick up on the waiver wire, guys who are up and coming, who are having breakout years halfway through. And so it is, it's just barter and trade. This is commodities. It's almost like day trading stocks. They don't really see the trail of blood that follows these players off the field, but a lot of that is by design. The television production is very tight. You don't see the pain. You know, as soon as you see a guy who's getting dragged off the field, they cut to the new guy, the guy who's running on the field. And there's always 22 guys on the field. They're wearing helmets. They're wearing face masks. You don't know who they are. You'll never meet them in real life. life. Their pain is not real. And so that game always goes on. The game must go on, and you'll always be able to field enough guys to play. And so you'll always forget about the guys who aren't around. But those guys who aren't around are dealing with severe injuries that they're rehabbing, and they're medicating. They're having surgeries for it, and they're often being pumped full of very, very dangerous drugs to kill the pain that's endemic to the sport. So I think the bodies of these players and the brains of these players are taking the worst of this force. The fantasy football players aren't really risking much.
Pain very real to those who play. We got Alice and Tucker calling here. Alice first. Alice, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling as a grandmother and mother because I see the terrible damage to character that this this horrible gambling brings about. And yes, I love the gamesmanship. I love the teamwork, but it's not worth it. We're like the Romans and the Christians. Remember when they fed them to the lions? Well, and I don't mean Detroit Lions, but it's about as bad. It's just not ethical. And they're treating these people like bits of chessmen on a board.
Real flesh and blood, human beings. And you say it's like gladiatorial sport. What do you make of that view, Nate? You know what's out there, and concern has only risen as the toll of concussion injuries in particular has become better understood.
Well, I think the more players we hear from who feel empowered to speak their own truth about their own human pain and their own human toll that they go through playing that game, the better. But players are implored to shut up and play. We don't want to hear about the consequences from the men themselves. It's about the people who tell the story. It's about the narrative. It's about Tom Brady and the ball inflation scandal. It's about, you know, Peyton Manning's retirement and who the best team is this week and why this team sucks and this team is good and these guys have no chance at the Super Bowl and it's a must win for them. Meanwhile, there are men, American men, our brothers, our sons, our friends who are sacrificing their brains on a daily basis, weekly basis out there to satisfy the demands of the industry and then being lambasted when they don't do it well enough. And oftentimes they're left after the fact with no health care. We don't get lifetime health care for the injuries we get on the field. We get 5 years of post-career health coverage, and then we're on our own with a long list of pre-existing conditions, a battered brain, and no idea where to go. And so there are a lot of ways in which the NFL is failing the health and the soul of the players. And I think the fans, the media, everyone is to blame for this. I think we're all in it. If we're participating, if we're listening to this show, if we watch football, we're all in it. And so I think it's important to keep the pain in mind of the guys who are doing
it. What about this perspective? Hill writes to us, says, getting pushed out of pro football sounds just like being laid off when your job moves to China, except for the $20 million or so that I didn't have in the bank. you may be injured, you may have pain, but you're loaded.
Right. No, not loaded. That's a common misconception. Most guys will leave the NFL and not be millionaires. They're not all making $1 million. The average career is 3 years, and then you're on your own. Like I said, with a lot of injuries, most likely a little bit of brain damage. Whether or not that's going to be symptomatic, we still don't know why some of these guys are symptomatic as far as brain trauma and others aren't. The science is still budding. But also, you leave the NFL with very few real-world skills. There are no other industries that will take you and put your football skills to work unless you want to be a coach, a football coach, or you want to get into the media. And that's really reserved for the stars. They don't want the average player's perspective, because the average player's perspective is not that I have $20 million in the bank. It is that I don't have enough money to live on for the rest of my life, and I don't know what to do with my life. Oh, and I'm also beaten down.
Yeah.
So, no, that's a myth, and it's intended to absolve the fans of any kind of liability when they participate in it.
Tucker in Frisco, Colorado. Tucker, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate the subject matter. And, Tom, you produce an incredible show. I'm very, very grateful.
Thank you.
What I'd like to say is that it's not just fantasy football. There's fantasy hockey. There's fantasy baseball. You know, and I think that the sports industry in the United States is definitely abusive and takes advantage of the individuals that are able to produce the performances that we expect every week or every day, you know, depending on the sport itself.
Yeah, yeah.
my question, I suppose, is how do we integrate, you know, the funds from the side bet gambling that we have going on in the country? How do we integrate it and get it back to the players?
How would you even do it? It's a good question. Nate, if you wanted to sort of share the wealth of this new arena, which maybe have a brutalizing effect, but it's popular, there's a lot of money moving through it, how would that cycle back?
Yeah, I think maybe the FanDuel, DraftKings, the sites that offer fantasy football, if I click on Julio Jones's name, if I want him on my team, and I press whatever, send, to get him on my team, I think Julio should get a percentage of that pick, or a percentage of my entry fee, or something like that built into it. Because after all, it is Julio Jones's name, Julio Jones's life, his body of work that I'm bringing on to my team. And so I think if they were able to negotiate some kind of percentage of how many times they were chosen, I think that would be a good start.
There may be a way to share the river of money running through. Randy in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're on, Randy. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I just want to say, you know, to start off, I'm a Packer fan, and I play a lot of fantasy, but I'll tell you what, if it comes between, you know, the guy I'm playing has Aaron Rodgers or the Packers lose, I'm picking the Packers win every time. So I think there's fantasy fans and then there's actual football fans. And I love fantasy for the fact that it actually engages you and makes it even better. So that's the way I feel.
And you're still loyal, true to your school there with the Packers. I mean, what about it? And we got here's Roy on Twitter writes to us, I could never root against a Saints player and would never root for a Falcons player, so no fantasy for me. He just avoids it altogether. Can you avidly be a fantasy football player and be a true avid fan of a team, Nate? Can you keep both those things going at one time?
I don't know. I suppose it's up to the individual and in their heart to answer that question, but I think it's definitely spreading out the loyalty in a way where you can't focus it all on one team anymore. You are focusing it on your own ability to win this matchup, and that if you take that part seriously, your own win in this matchup, then you are willing to do what it takes to win that matchup, and that might be starting or drafting a player who is plays for a rival of your favorite team. And it just so might happen that the game comes up where your favorite team plays a rival team, and on that rival team you have a couple fantasy players going, and so you're watching this game with fractured devotions. And yes, your loyalty is towards your team, the one you want to win, but if they lose, you might have a little solace knowing that your fantasy team won
yeah.
the process.
Another escape hatch for success there. We're talking about fantasy football with Nate Jackson. His book is Fantasy Man. Carl in Nashville is calling. Hi, Carl. You're on the air. You a fantasy football fan, Carl?
I am. Well, here's the thing, Tom. 7 years ago, I thought fantasy football was the stupidest thing of all time. Because how in the hell can you root for a person that's against your team? Let me give you a perfect example. If you cut me right now, my blood don't turn red when it hit the oxygen. It stay blue. That's because I'm a loyal Dallas Cowboys
okay,
fan.
Okay.
I'm not a Tony Romo fan. I'm not a Roger Staubach fan. I'm not an Emmitt Smith fan. I am a Cowboys fan. So 7 years ago, some of my friends, they needed one more person to make the league
yep.
even. So I jumped in just out of loyalty to my friends. I end up finishing in fifth place. And to make a long story short here, in 7 years, I've won the championship 5 years. And the reason why I've won five championships and 4-1 and on my way to winning three in a row, I've won two back-to-back twice. Because I have to dig deep. I don't put players from the NFC East. That's the going straight up against the Cowboys. Eagles, Washington Redskins, I don't. So I have to really dig deep. An example, this week, and as Nate can tell you, if you all don't know, Aaron Rodgers is one of the best players in NFL football.
Yep, yep,
guess
sure.
what? He's going to be on my bench because he's directly going up against my Dallas.
How do you win if you're not just heartlessly going after the best stats, Carl? How do you win out of loyalty?
It's very, very difficult. So and the reason why I win all of those championships is because I have to dig deep. There was a guy named C.J. Anderson a couple of years, nobody heard of. I got him on my team. He just turned out to be a really good player. Barnage last year, tight end from Cleveland. Nobody knew about him. And one of the advantages I have that everybody's always trying to fight last year's seasons with last year's players instead of going out and finding gems. They got a guy named Howard that no one paid attention to that played for the Bears, and I had to get him, and he's ended up being one of the best running backs over the past 3 or 4 weeks now. It's real difficult for me to win because I would not get people that's going up against my football team.
Carl, we've got a true to your school and a winner at the same time. Nate Jackson, he's got to dig deep. Maybe he would have found you when you were in the Broncos, Nate. Maybe he would have put you into a winning ledger on his fantasy team.
If he would have put me on his team, he might not have won one of those championships that he was talking about. But he has principle. He has principle. There aren't a lot of fantasy owners out there operating under those same principles. I applaud him. And it worked for him. So that might be the recipe.
I guess he's doing his scouting here, looking out for those little-known gems that are out there. Where do you see this all evolving? Does fantasy football somehow devour the game itself ultimately? Do they live side by side? Are these permanently, you know, amenable with one another or not, Nate?
I don't really know. I know that the NFL is interested in all new marketing opportunities that will bring in eyeballs and bring in money. And it seems as if fantasy football has done that over the last couple of years. And seeing those players in those advertisements, those NFL-sponsored advertisements, hawking the product, it seems like they're trying to find a way to make it permanent. We like to gamble. We like to be involved with things. We like to compete. We like to play our friends and things. And this is a way to do it. It quantifies the game in a way that it had never been prior. The score of the game doesn't actually matter at all in fantasy football. The score of the game doesn't matter. It's the statistical movement of the ball, yardage, catches, touchdowns by your players, and those aren't going to go away. And I think the more obsessed we become with statistics, the more likely we'll dive into this. Unless ratings continue to plummet, then they may cut it off at the head.
A league as stats, players as stats. Nate Jackson's new book is Fantasy Man, a former NFL player's descent into the brutality of fantasy football. Nate, it's always great talking with you. Thanks so much for being with us from Culver City in California today. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Tom. I enjoyed it.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Maeve Pajess, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica. With help from Halima Gikandi and Weiwa Lee, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. There's the lineup. This is On Point. Thank you.